Last week on Remembrance Day, Canadian Veteran Affairs Minister Stephen Blaney thanked veterans for promoting the Canadian values of peace, democracy, and the rule of law around the world. Warrior Nation, a new book from Between the Lines Publishing, argues instead that the Canadian government and its right-wing supporters are more interested in promoting war as a glorious enterprise than in working for peace. Warrior Nation, Rebranding Canada in an Age of Anxiety, is written by Ian McKay and Jamie Swift, and co-author Jamie Swift joins me now by phone. Hello, Jamie.
Hi.
Hi, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
In the book, you talk about how politicians and others are distorting the past to reinvent Canada as a more militarized nation. And I wanted to start by talking about the major wars of the 20th century, and I guess World War One in particular. In terms of the government discussion around this war, what facts are now being ignored or distorted?
I think it's not so much facts that are ignored or distorted. It's the portrayal of war itself as a glorious enterprise, as you mentioned, that the way we talk about war, or the current regime talks about war, is to emphasize patriotism, glory, and valor, and not to really even mention, in fact, to airbrush out the really squalid, gory, and tragic nature of war, and particularly World War One, the first adventure in highly industrialized mass killing in the history of humanity. And I think what they're playing on, and if we thought that the glorification of the War of 1812, which is now underway and for which the government has paid $28 million just this in the current fiscal year to promote, if we thought they made a big deal out of the War of 1812, we can only imagine what they'll try to do or what kind of propaganda barrage we'll be subjected to with respect to the 100th anniversary of the beginning of the First World War.
When government or historians focus on war and warriors to look at historical events, what are they ignoring in terms of the economy or social relations in creating a nation?
Well, I think history, there's an old-fashioned notion of history that was taught in the 19th century and probably up until the 1950s that our country was formed by great men, big men, who fought important battles. And it's this sort of a Hall of Fame view of history. After that, you know, historians, Canadian historians in particularly, started to look at history as something much more complex, the struggles of common people to elbow their way into the public square, Aboriginal history, women's history, labor history. And so they tried and often successfully tried to show how the creation of a nation and national memory is complex, and it's often contested terrain. So this pushback by conservative historians backed by the current government to portray Canadian history as all about war all the time is sort of a quaint and old-fashioned schoolboy kind of idea of history that really doesn't jive with reality, but that doesn't say that it's not a very important barrage that we're being subjected to. Orwell said famously in 1984 that he who controls the past controls the future, and he who controls the present controls the past. So what we argue in Warrior Nation is that the present government is trying to recast our past in order to promote a future in which Canada will play a much more aggressive military role and really will, and already has, turned its back on peacekeeping traditions.
One of the people you discuss in the book is a former governor general and also a British lord, John Buchan, who's also featured in Discover Canada, the Conservative government's new Canadian citizenship guide. And I didn't know much about him before reading the book, and I found it very interesting, the information you provided.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about why he would be an offensive figure for many Canadians as someone to celebrate?
Well, he was a race theorist. He was Governor General of Canada in the late 30s, a very successful novelist and nonfiction writer, ground out millions of words, a former concentration camp administrator in the South African War, which incidentally one can hardly portray as a war for freedom. Canadians went over there, but they were fighting the British, who Canadians backed, the British Empire, were fighting the Boer settlers for the right to oppress the native indigenous South African population. Buchan, as I say, was a concentration camp administrator then, and it's very telling that in the Harper government's new citizenship guide that every immigrant applying for landed immigrant status and citizenship, has to study this document and pass a test on it. And the only 20th century political figure featured in the guide is John Buchan, Lord Tweedsmuir, an imperialist, a race theorist, and we would argue a person that is really, it's really questionable to run his flag up the pole as somebody that we should, whose opinions we should take seriously. But I think you're right. This Discover Canada, this new citizenship guide, is like the warrior nation for beginners, or maybe for dummies.
Are the problems with Canada's imperialist or colonial history that was promoted or engineered by people like Buchan, is this being glossed over to support a newer militaristic vision of Canada?
Oh, most certainly. We would argue that the way the citizenship guide treats, say, Indigenous people, there's a few romantic images of Aboriginal peoples in the citizenship guide, but it really, at the very beginning of the citizenship guide, more or less says that Canada began 400 years ago, and it tells the aspiring Canadian citizens that they're becoming part of a great tradition of pioneers, and that for 400 years, settlers came and built this proud history of Canada. And that really does a gross disservice to First Peoples and the people who were displaced by the imperial enterprise that basically created the country we now call Canada, the French Empire and the British Empire. So I think anybody interested in this should look at Discover Canada as a very, very good way of understanding what the government is trying to get at.
Although the government, the federal conservative government, is spending money on wars and promoting past wars, like the War of 1812, as you mentioned, it has been criticized for providing inadequate financial support to both veterans and returning current soldiers.
Well, yes, that's quite dramatic. They spent $750,000 trying to fight to prevent veterans from having their pensions clawed back. They were defeated consistently in the courts. Just this past Remembrance Day, a highly decorated Canadian peacekeeper who earned his medals in the Bosnian civil wars refused to wear his medals on Remembrance Day. And for a former soldier, and soldiers really take pride in medals and as expressions of what they've done in the service to their country, for a soldier to make that, and a well-decorated soldier to make that public statement, speaks volumes about the government, a government that thinks or portrays war as glorious and is willing to, in Ontario, set up a highway of heroes and exalt the dead, men and women killed in Afghanistan. But for those who are scarred psychologically and physically by the effects of war, they get the short end of the stick. And I think that is something that happened after World War I as well. And so you really have to question that and point out how hypocritical that is.
Is there a danger in, I guess, criticizing the current war making of the current government that we could glorify the past and the ideal of Canada as a neutral peacekeeper during the Cold War, which can be seen as a myth as well, and also ignore the role of the other political parties in supporting war?
Yeah, I think so. I think first of all, Canada's war in Kandahar, the longest war Canada was ever involved in, it was the Liberal Party that got us into that tragic debacle, number one. Number two, I think the history of peacekeeping, we shouldn't romanticize peacekeeping at all. Certainly Lester Pearson, who is the foreign minister in the 1956 at the time of the Suez Crisis, got his famous Nobel Peace Prize for proposing a United Nations peacekeeping force in the Sinai, and that was important. But we point out in Warrior Nation that peacekeeping is a very complex enterprise, and that sometimes, in the case of the Congo, for instance, the peacekeepers in the early 60s, not the current tragedy of the Congo, we'll keep that one separate, but the first Congo Civil War post-independence in the early 60s, it was a Canadian officer who played an instrumental role in fingering the Congolese nationalist leader, Patrice Lumumba, to his CIA-backed opponents, and that led to the murder of Lumumba in the early 60s. So peacekeeping really varies. I think it's a complex thing. I certainly think it's worth undertaking. It can turn tragic, as the case of Dallaire in Rwanda showed us so graphically. But I think we make a mistake in completely turning our back on it, that I think it's a really important use for Canadians and other militaries in the world, and we should not turn our back on it the way we have. Apparently the number of Canadians now active in UN peacekeeping operations, you could probably put them in a very small school bus.
I wanted to ask you about what's going on in Gaza, and there was a comment last week by Stephen Harper that said that Canada recognizes and supports Israel's right to defend itself against terrorist attacks. And also last week, Defense Minister Peter McKay described volatility in the Middle East and elsewhere as the new normal while he was speaking at an international defense symposium in Halifax. Do you think the Canadian government is hindering peace talks or a possible ceasefire with comments of this type?
Well, I think the Canadian government has really no role to play at all there. I think Harper and Baird and McKay and that group are blindly supportive of Israel, sort of their country, right or wrong. It's not that Canada has not always supported Israel, but now it's reached an absurd extent. Soon after Harper was elected in 2006, a Canadian peacekeeper was deliberately targeted by the Israeli Defense Force in South Lebanon during the Hezbollah-Israeli war and was killed along with three other UN peacekeepers. And the newly elected prime minister, all he was able to do was shrug. That's when he famously described the Israeli attacks on Lebanon as measured. So in answer to your question, I think it really, as far as, you know, the peace or a possible ceasefire in Gaza, you know, Canada has no role to play, but it's highly symbolic that the Harper government has abandoned any pretense of having a nuanced foreign policy with respect to Israel-Palestine.
And just lastly, I wanted to ask if you think Harper is succeeding in convincing Canadians that we are a warrior nation.
I don't think so. I think during the war in Kandahar, polls consistently showed that most Canadians didn't think it was a good idea. Most Canadians, when questioned by pollsters, public opinion sounders, will tell you that when asked about Canadian foreign policy, they always put peacekeeping way up at the top. We tend to regard ourselves primarily as peacekeepers, even though our government seems to be trying to drive the bus in the other direction, both literally and with respect to its propaganda efforts.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today.
Okay, thanks for having me.
I've been speaking with Jamie Swift, and he is the co-author with Ian McKay of Warrior Nation, Rebranding Canada in an Age of Anxiety. And there is an author talk with Jamie Swift tomorrow. That's November 20th at 7 p.m. at Mondragon Bookstore and Coffee House in Winnipeg at 91 Albert Street. And you're listening to Mud and Water, mudandwater.org on CKUW 95.9 FM.